Thank you very much. Good luck, everyone. The Talmud tells us that there are 613 mitzvahs, but the Talmud doesn't tell us which are the 613 mitzvahs. So the Rambam wrote a volume, Sefer HaMitzvahs, where he tries to list off the mitzvahs. It's interesting, the Sefer HaMitzvahs is really the introduction to the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. The Rambam explains that the mitzvah to learn Torah means to know which are the 613 mitzvahs and to know all of the details regarding each of the 613 mitzvahs. So the Sefer HaMitzvahs is the introduction to the whole Mishneh Torah of the Rambam. And then in every section, the Rambam says he's going to discuss Hilchos Shabbos, and that has so many mitzvahs asay, and so many mitzvahs loisas. He's going to talk about Hilchos Yom Kippur, he's going to talk about Hilchos Yontif. So we get to the end of the Mishneh Torah. He says, now you know all the 613 mitzvahs. That's called Talmud Torah. They know what are the 613 mitzvahs with all of the details. So the Rambam does not list as one of the 613 mitzvahs to live in Eretz Yisrael. He does not count that as a mitzvah. The Ramban has a running commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvahs. The Rambam lists off what, in his opinion, are the 248 mitzvahs asay and 365 mitzvahs lois asay. So the Ramban disagrees with about 16, 17, 18 mitzvahs asay. He deletes them and has to replace them with a different 17, 18 mitzvahs. And he deletes about 17, 18 mitzvahs lois asay of the Rambam and has to replace them with a different 17, 18 mitzvahs, because the Midrashim tell us that there are 248 mitzvahs asay and 365 mitzvahs lois asay. So the Ramban, in replacing about 17, 18 mitzvahs in the listing of the mitzvahs asay, the Ramban says the Rambam forgot to count the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. It quotes Pesukim in the Chumash that it says in the Torah. The end of the Chumash Bamidbar, Vaharashtim Mesoretz, Vishaptim Bo. We should all move to Eretz Yisrael. We should all live there. So he says the Rambam forgot to count that mitzvah. Then the Ramban quotes the Mishnah Maseches Ksubis. The Mishnah says in Ksubis, the end of Maseches Ksubis, that if a couple is married for many years, and then they live in Atlanta for many years, and then one fine day the husband becomes crazy, he decides he wants to move to Eretz Yisrael. The wife says, what do you mean? But all the children, all the grandchildren, everybody lives over here. The husband says, I'm moving to Eretz Yisrael with or without you. If you don't come with me, I'll give you a get. And she says, you're crazy. I want to stay here with all the family. So the husband has a right to divorce his wife and not pay her any ksuba. And if it's the reverse, the wife has this mishigas. The wife decides she wants to move to Eretz Yisrael. The husband says, no, but all the family lives over here. And the wife says, I'm moving with or without you. And if you don't want to go with me, so give me a get. So the husband has to give his wife a get. And he has to pay his ksuba. The payment of the ksuba, the Mishnah tells us early in ksubas, the din is whenever there's a divorce, the husband has to pay the ksuba, unless it's clearly the wife's fault. The wife doesn't want to go to mikveh. She doesn't want to have any children. She's cursing the husband. She's cursing the in-laws. If the wife is at fault for ruining the marriage, so then she loses the ksuba. Now the wife is not at fault, then if no one is at fault, of the husband's fault, then the husband has to pay ksuba. Only when it's clearly the wife's fault for destroying the marriage, then the husband doesn't have to pay ksuba. So here the Mishnah says, if the wife has this mishigah, she wants to move to Eretz Yisrael. The husband doesn't want to go along. So we say the husband has to give his wife a get and he has to pay her ksuba. That is not her fault. In other words, when you have a couple, the one who insists they want to go to Eretz Yisrael has the gerech b'tayna. And whoever doesn't want to go along with the one who's moving to Eretz Yisrael is the one who's responsible for ruining the marriage. So the Gemara in the end of Ksubas has the discussion of how important of a mitzvah it is to live in Eretz Yisrael, even to live in Eretz Yisrael in a goyish city as opposed to living chutz la'aretz in a Jewish neighborhood, and so on and so forth, how significant it is to live in Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban says, how can the Rambam have not listed this mitzvah? He himself quotes all these passages in the Gemara. In Ksubas, in fact, that's where it is in Shulchan Aruch. If you want to find a din in Shulchan Aruch that there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, where would you look? So, I would have thought you should look in the end of Yeridaya, where it talks about the laws of Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. About anything that grows in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be mafish chumus and maisus. I would have thought to look over there. That's not where it is. You'll find a din in the middle of Hilchos Ksubas, that the man who divorces his wife has to pay a ksuba, unless the wife is at fault for ruining the marriage. And then they quote the Mishnah in Ksubas in the context that is quoted in Ksubas. That's where it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. That if a couple is married and one wants to go to Eretz Yisrael, the other one doesn't want to go along, So the one who doesn't want to go along is at fault for ruining the marriage. The one who wants to go, Teretz Yisrael has a Yerechtetayna. The one who wants to stay behind is not doing right. So that's what the Ramban quotes. You see from the Pesukim in the Chumash that there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. And lest anyone think that that pasuk only applied in the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it doesn't speak to all the future generations, so the Rambam says, well, the Mishnah tells us the pasuk is speaking to all the future generations as well. It's not a Hayra Shor. This is a mitzvah Lidoris. And every generation, the Jewish people have to live in Eretz Yisrael. So how come the Rambam have not quoted this mitzvah? Just parenthetically, there is an interesting tshuva that's written by Rav Shlomo Kluger. He lived in Galicia in the 1800s. So there was a couple that was, a couple were married there, and they had children, grandchildren, and the husband was never successful in business. He tried one business, he didn't do well, tried another business, a third business, he wasn't successful. So someone said, why don't you go to Eretz Yisrael? Maybe you'll be successful there. So he said, okay, he's going to Eretz Yisrael. So the wife said, Meshugana, all the children live here, all the grandchildren, I don't want to go to Eretz Yisrael. So he says, I'm going to divorce you, and I'm not going to pay you the ksuba, because that's what it says in the Mishnah. So Shlomo Kluger said, the din doesn't apply in such a case. The din in the Mishnah only applies if the husband is going to Eretz Yisrael for Zionistic reasons, because he wants to fulfill a mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. Because to divorce your wife against her wishes, that's an aveira. So in rare cases, we allow the husband to do the aveira of divorcing his wife. She doesn't want to get divorced. She wants to remain married. So we permit him to do this aveira because, after all, he's all fired up with the zeal of the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. But over here, he wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael. Not he wasn't inspired by the mitzvah. If he would have made a good parnasa in Galicia, he would have stayed behind. The only motivation to move to Eretz Yisrael was he wasn't making a living. And some of his friends, some of his business associates thought that he would do well in Eretz Yisrael. So if he's not going to the Shem Mitzvah, he's going to the Shem Parnasa, then if he divorces his wife, he has to pay the ksuba. He has no right to divorce his wife. That's an interesting tshuva of Shlomo Kluger. So this is the question. The Ramban writes that this mitzvah applies, the mitzvah, biblical mitzvah applies throughout all the generations. All the Jews have to live in Eretz Yisrael. And the Rambam failed to mention the mitzvah. How come? So there's a commentary printed on the side of the page in the Sefer Mitzvahs that's called Megillas Esther. It was written by a man. Doesn't matter if it would have been written by a woman, it would have been wonderful also. So it was written by a man whose mother passed away as he went to print, and his mother's name was Esther. He wanted to memorialize his mother. So he writes in the introduction, he's calling the Sefer after his mother's name, Megillas Esther. Very nice Sefer. So his job is always to defend the position of the Rambam. Whenever the Ramban takes issue with the Rambam, he always comes to the defense of the Rambam. So if you sign a contract always, that the Rambam is always right, you're always going to say, so half the time you may be right and half the time you're going to be wrong. So it's not always valid what he defends the Rambam. So he writes over here to defend the Rambam. The reason why the Rambam didn't count the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael is because the Rambam, in the first half of the Sefer Mitzvahs, gives you rules and regulations what belongs in the Minyan HaMitzvahs and what not. So the Rambam has 14 kolalim, 14 farashim, 14 guidelines to determine what's considered a mitzvah. So one of the Rambam's principles is we only include mitzvahs that are binding throughout all the future generations. For example, in today's Sefer we read that they weren't in the desert when the moon came down. The Jews were not allowed to leave over the moon till the next morning. So the Rambam does not include that in the Minyan HaMitzvahs because that was only during the duration of the 40 years in the desert when the moon fell down. Even if there would be moon falling down today, we would be permitted to leave over the moon till tomorrow morning. We don't have any moon. But even if one would fall down, there wouldn't be any avera to leave it over. That was a hayra shor. There wasn't a mitzvah to do. Or we spoke this morning about the mitzvah on Erev Pesach of Yitzias Mitzrayim to knock on the next door neighbor's doors and to ask for gifts before the Jews left Mitzrayim. So the Rambam doesn't include that in the Minyan HaMitzvahs. The Rambam says that was once in the history of the world on the occasion of Yitzias Mitzrayim to have a knock on the next door, on the goyish or next door neighbor's doors and ask for matanos before they leave. So the Megillas Esther in his commentary on the Rambam says the reason why the Rambam doesn't include the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is because it doesn't apply in all the future generations because the Talmud speaks about the Shalosh Shavuos. We spoke about that this morning also. The Talmud speaks about there's a pasuk that appears three times in Shir HaShirim. The pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God had the Jewish people take three oaths, and it's unclear exactly what the Jewish people were swearing about. And the Talmud explains that one of the oaths was that we're not going to force the issue of establishing a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael against the wishes of the Goyish nations who are there now. So that's what the Megillas Esther was, the first one who quoted that passage in the Gemara as a halachic statement. It was usually taken as an agadic statement, the Shalosh Shavuos, and no one exactly understood fully what the Agada was driving at. And the first one who took this passage in the Gemara as a halachic principle, the Shalosh Shavuos, was the Megillas Esther. And then later in the 1800s, the Munkacher Rebbe and the other Hungarian rabbis, they all quoted this comment of the Megillas Esther, the Shalosh Shavuos. I remember 15 years ago, a young musmach, gave me a sefer of Sharas HaTshuvos that he published. So I thanked him, and I looked in the table of contents, and I see he has a whole section on the dinim of the Shalosh Shavuos. So I was wondering, what are you going to say already about the Shalosh Shavuos? He meant the laws of the dry vachim, the Shlosha Shavuos, the 3 weeks in between Shavuos and Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, the laws of Avelis that we observe. That's not called Shalosh Shavuos, that's called Shlosha Shavuos. The 3 weeks, Shalosh Shavuos, are the three oaths that the Jewish people took before the days of Shana Melech. So the Megillas Esther quotes the Shalosh Shavuos that we're not allowed to establish a Jewish government in Eretz against the wishes of the non-Jewish nations. So therefore you see that this mitzvah doesn't apply throughout all the future generations. That's why the Rambam didn't quote it. So there is an interesting tshuva written by the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer was a Chassidus Rebbe, Sachet Shavuos Rebbe. He died 100 years ago. He was a great goyim when he published his sefer, the Eglei Tal, on Hilchos Shabbos. So the people in Lithuania didn't know, the people in Poland, Lithuania didn't know who this person was. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was so enthralled by the sefer, and then he found out it was written by Chassidus Rebbe. He couldn't believe it. Such a fantastic sefer. And the Avnei Nezer is Gorgavaldik, the tshuvas that he wrote, are knockout tshuvas. The tshuvas are even better than the Eglei Tal. So the Avnei Nezer was asked, he was a Chassidus Rebbe, so he was asked, this is what the Zionist movement was just beginning then, the end of the 1800s. So he was asked, is there a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael b'zman hazeh? And if there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, how come the Gdolei HaChassidus didn't go to Eretz Yisrael all the generations? Because he was a Chassidus Rebbe, so he has to defend the position of the Chassidus Rabbein. So first half of the tshuva, he ascertains that absolutely there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael b'zman hazeh. So he has to relate to this comment made by the Megillas Esther. So he says the Megillas Esther is wrong. With all due respect, the Megillas Esther is wrong. What do you mean? The Rambam doesn't count mitzvahs that don't apply throughout all the future generations. That's why he doesn't count the mitzvah of establishing a Jewish government and living in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam quotes all the mitzvahs in the 630 mitzvahs. All the mitzvahs that have to do with bringing korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. No, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash today. So how come the Rambam counts those mitzvahs? So the answer is that's not the same as saying when you knock on the next door neighbor's doors on Erev Pesach of Yetzias Mitzrayim to ask for a gift. That was once in the history of the world. That doesn't apply in any future generation. When they weren't permitted to leave over Mon till the next morning, that was only the 40 years in the desert. That doesn't apply to future generations. The mitzvahs of establishing a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael and living in Eretz Yisrael, of course they're going to, the Megillas Esther himself admits that when Mashiach will come, all of these mitzvahs will apply again. So the Rambam should have included it in the Minyan mitzvahs. That's not a Hayroa Shor. Due to circumstances, the mitzvah doesn't apply in a few generations or 1,000 years or so. That's not called a Hayroa Shor. That's a mitzvah that does that you don't have the opportunity to fulfill. Furthermore, the Megillas Esther is incorrect. The Rambam does mention the mitzvah of establishing a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. The Megillas Esther said that one of the Shalosh Shavuos, one of the three oaths was that the Jewish people will not press the issue, we won't force the issue of establishing a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam does count the mitzvah of establishing a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam quotes the passage from the Gemara. The Gemara rarely tells you which are the 613 mitzvahs. But every so often the Gemara will say, this is a mitzvah, that is a mitzvah. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, and the Rambam quotes this, the beginning of Hilchos Malachim, Sholosh mitzvahs nitztavi Yisrael v'chnisatim la'aretz. The Jewish people became obligated to fulfill three mitzvahs upon entering Eretz Yisrael on the days of Yeshua ben Nun, and to fulfill the three mitzvahs in the following order. The first mitzvah is to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvah number one. Mitzvah number two is to wipe out the nation of Amalek. We read a little bit about it this morning in the Parsha. Mitzvah number three is after wiping out Amalek and there will be peace in Eretz Yisrael, then there's a mitzvah to build a Beis HaMikdash. So the Rambam quotes those three mitzvahs and he quotes that passage from the Talmud. So the Rambam does count the mitzvah to establish the government in Eretz Yisrael, despite the fact that the Shalva Shavuos that we're not allowed to force the Yishuv. That wasn't what the Ramban was asking about. Ramban was asking a different question. The Rambam didn't count the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. These are two different mitzvahs. What is a mitzvah to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael? And another mitzvah, and that mitzvah the Rambam does mention, Muhammad Lahamelech, to establish a Jewish government over all of Eretz Yisrael. And number two is a different mitzvah. We should all live in Eretz Yisrael. That was the time of the Ramban. The Rambam should have mentioned that mitzvah, should have counted that as a separate mitzvah. All the Jews should live in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the question. How come the Rambam doesn't count the mitzvah? He quotes the Mishnah from Ksubas. He quotes all the laws. He's supposed to live in Eretz Yisrael. And if the couple is married and the wife decides she wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, the husband doesn't want to go along. So we say the husband is at fault for breaking up the marriage and he has to pay her the ksuba, all based on the assumption that there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. So how come the Rambam didn't count it in listing off the mitzvah? So one of the commentaries writes that the Rambam has one of his 14 guidelines, one of the 14 principles to determine what belongs in the listing of the mitzvahs, what not. But the Rambam writes, we only include biblical mitzvahs. We don't include mitzvahs that are only midrabbanan. And the Rambam says that it's not correct that there were those who preceded the Rambam, this is Sefer Halachas Gedolos, who also attempted to make a list of which are the 613 mitzvahs, and he lists the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, the mitzvah of lighting the Erez Chanuk, and the mitzvah of Netilas Yadayim. So the Rambam makes fun of the Sefer Halachas Gedolos. He says, no, you only count 613 mitzvahs that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the expression that the Talmud says. Tariq mitzvahs nemar lo Moshe b'sina. Moshe Rabbeinu was told that Hasina they should read the Megillah on Purim, they should light the Neres Chanukah. The whole story of Purim didn't happen yet. The story of Chanukah didn't happen yet. You have to figure out 613 mitzvahs that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Hasina. So, just like the Rambam says, we don't include mitzvahs that are only midrabbanan, so that's why the Rambam didn't count the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam agrees that there's a mitzvah, but it's only a mitzvah midrabbanan. Very difficult answer. It's usually assumed that it's not correct. The Knesset HaGdolah writes this answer, that the reason why the Rambam didn't mention this in the listing of the mitzvahs, the Rambam thinks that it's only a mitzvah midrabbanan. You read the Chumash, you get the clear impression that it's a mitzvah min haTorah, that we should all be living in Eretz Yisrael. So how did it come off to say it's only a mitzvah midrabbanan? The standard explanation that's given by many Acharonim, including the Avnei Nezer, the Sochav Shavu Rebbe, is the Rambam agrees with the Ramban that there is such a biblical mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, but the Rambam feels that it's included in another mitzvah that he counted already. So it doesn't make sense to count the same mitzvah twice. It's incorporated, it's subsumed under a different heading. Which mitzvah is it included in? So the Avnei Nezer, the Sochav Shavu Rebbe, develops a whole theme whereby he explains several passages in the Rambam. He postulates a klal, he quotes it from earlier commentaries on the Sefer Mitzvah, he postulates a klal, and whenever you have two mitzvahs, and one mitzvah is for the purpose of leading up to another mitzvah, it does make sense to count both because it's a repeat. Mitzvah A is to lead up to mitzvah B. So here the Rambam counts the mitzvah Hacharim Tacharimim. The Torah tells us when we enter Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yishuv Minun, we have to wipe out the Zayinumas, the seven nations who lived there, the Knani, Achiv, Chiti, Aprizi, Amora, Haibusi, Bahadirgoshi, all the seven nations who live there. You have to wipe them out, and then we should live in Eretz Yisrael. So, what do you mean? There's a mitzvah to wipe out the Zainumis, and then we'll move back to Borough Park, we'll move back to Atlanta. So what did we accomplish by wiping out the Zainumis? It means we should wipe out the Zainumis and clear out the land, and we should take over. So mitzvah A is for the purpose of leading up to mitzvah B. And the Rambam does include the mitzvah. The Rambam does count the mitzvah of Hacharim Tachrimim to wipe out the Zainumas who live in Eretz Yisrael. So since he counted that mitzvah, it's self-understood that mitzvah A leads up to mitzvah B, we should live in Eretz Yisrael. So that's why the Rambam didn't think that it makes sense to count as an independent mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's included in the mitzvah of Hacharim Tachrimim. Not all of the Poskim agree with this suggestion of the Avnei Nezer, but they all assume that his assumption is correct, that the Rambam agrees that it's a mitzvah min haTorah to live in Eretz Yisrael. And the reason why he didn't count it is because they assume that it's included in another mitzvah. So they give other suggestions. So some of the Acharonim suggest that the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is included in the mitzvah of Uvos Hidbok. We should be close to God. We should cling to God. So the Talmud tells us, Kol Hador b'chutz l'aretz kilo ein lo Eloah. One who lives in Chutz L'aretz is considered as if He's not really worshiping God. Even though we are Orthodox Jews, we keep all the mitzvahs, it's considered as if one who lives in Eretz Yisrael is considered as if he's closer to God. They told a story years ago that when Begin visited Reagan in the White House, Reagan was the president then, I think? No? Carter. I forgot already. Carter was the president. So he was showing him around the White House, and then he showed him a telephone. This is a telephone where he speaks to God, speaks to heaven. And this is long distance, very far away. So when he uses that telephone, he speaks to the kids in Nimrod, because it's going to be so expensive, he won't be able to pay for too long. He only speaks to the kids in Nimrod. So when the President of the United States visited Eretz Yisrael, so Begin showed him around his White House, his office, and he showed him a telephone. This is the telephone that he calls when he has to speak to God, and it's a local call. You can talk as long as you want. God is right here in Yerushalayim. God is close to us. So that's what many of the commentaries say. The reason why the Rambam didn't count the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, because it's subsumed under the mitzvah of Vaisidbach. We're supposed to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the way to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to be in Eretz Yisrael, to be in Yerushalayim. The Mishnah seems to say that Hakol Malim, if the couple lives in Chutz La'aretz and either one or the other wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, the other one is supposed to go along. And if they live anywhere else in Eretz Yisrael, one of them wants to move to Yerushalayim, so the spouse has to go along. So it seems that there's a bigger mitzvah to live in Yerushalayim than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. The reason being because you're closer to God. Yerushalayim, you're closer to God. Eretz Yisrael, you're closer to God. So that's what many commentaries say. Many of the Achranim say the reason why the Rambam didn't count the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is not because he doesn't think it's a mitzvah, not because he thinks it's only a mitzvah in the Rabbanon. No, it's a mitzvah in Torah to live in Eretz Yisrael, but it's included under the mitzvah of Uvoy Sidbom. Other Achranim give a different suggestion, that the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael is not really an independent mitzvah at all. It enhances each and every other mitzvah. When we wear tefillin in Eretz Yisrael, it's a bigger mitzvah. When we have a mezuzah in Eretz Yisrael, it's a bigger mitzvah. When we keep Shabbos and Kashrus and Paros HaMishpacha, all the 613 mitzvahs when observed in Eretz Yisrael are all observed in a more enhanced form. This is what Rashi writes in his commentary on Chumash. Rashi writes on the pasuk in Kriyat Shema that we recite twice a day, every day. It says, if we'll worship Avodah Zarah, God will chase us out from Eretz Yisrael, of Adatah Meher Me'al Ha'aretz HaTova. God will send us into exile. And then the next pasuk says that even when we'll be sent into exile, the Samtam is Varyel Alabachem, we should still continue to observe the mitzvah of tefillin and mezuzah, even though we're a chutz la'aretz. So Rashi quotes from the Tanoim, commenting on the pasuk, that the real place for observance of all the mitzvahs is in Eretz Yisrael. And the fact that we're obligated to observe the mitzvahs even when we're in Golus is of secondary significance, in order that we shouldn't forget what the mitzvahs are all about, so that when we will return back to Eretz Yisrael, they won't hit us like something new. We'll be familiar with the mitzvahs. The main place of fulfilling all the mitzvahs is really in Eretz Yisrael. And the Ramban, on his commentary on Chumash, elaborates on this Rashi, and he quotes many other psukim from the Chumash, which seem to indicate the same. So that's what the other commentaries say. The Rambam also agrees with the Ramban, of course, that there's a biblical mitzvah in our Torah that we should all live in Eretz Yisrael. And the reason why he didn't count it as an independent mitzvah, he feels that it enhances each one of the 613 mitzvahs. The main place for observance of all the mitzvahs is really in Eretz Yisrael. So they're getting back again. The Sochak Shavu Rebbe was asked in the late 1800s, is there a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael today? And if there is such a mitzvah, how come the Gedolei HaChassidus didn't move to Eretz Yisrael? So he says there absolutely is a mitzvah. And the comment made by the Megillas Esther that the reason why the Rambam doesn't count it as a mitzvah because it doesn't apply in our generation is totally not correct. The din that doesn't apply in our generation is to establish a Medina. They're not supposed to fight against the nations of the world, but to live in Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah still applies. So, and the reason why the Rambam didn't count it because it's included in a different mitzvah. Fine. Then he quotes the Tosfos as a comment on the Mishnah in the end of Ksubas. Tosfos writes then, in their generation, the days of the Baalei HaTosfos, the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael doesn't apply for two reasons. One reason is because it's dangerous to travel to Eretz Yisrael. You can lose your life traveling to Eretz Yisrael. So the Avnei Nezer writes over 100 years ago, he doesn't think that it's so dangerous to travel to Eretz Yisrael 100 years ago. Today, it's not so dangerous. It may even be more dangerous to stay in America. So he doesn't think that reason applies. Then Tyson gives another reason why they think the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael no longer applies today, because it's very difficult to observe the mitzvahs at least part, to observe the agricultural mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. So the Sacher Shavu Rebbe writes over 100 years ago, he doesn't think it's so difficult to observe the agricultural mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael today. There were observant farmers in Eretz Yisrael. There were Chalutzim who went to Eretz Yisrael, and they were observing the first people to move from Europe, a very religious group. So he doesn't see that either of the reason of Pesach applies, and really there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael today. So then he has to explain. Then he has to answer the second question: how come the Gdola Hasidus didn't move to Eretz Yisrael? So he said, well, first of all, he says, we won't be in complete fulfillment of the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael today, because when he wrote over 100 years ago, there was no Jewish Medina. It was under the Turks. And he says, when you read the Chumash, it says, v'harashtem es ha'aretz v'yishavtem bo. You should seize hold of the government of Eretz Yisrael. The Jewish people should establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. And then v'yishavtem bo. All the Jews in the world should live in Eretz Yisrael. So the complete mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael really only applies when it's under Jewish control. When Eretz Yisrael is under non-Jewish control, it'll only be an incomplete fulfillment of the mitzvah. Okay, incomplete fulfillment of the mitzvah is also... there's all partial credit. There's also important. We're talking this afternoon about wearing tzitzis, about trailers. So it's an incomplete fulfillment of the mitzvah. The complete fulfillment of the mitzvah is when you have tzitzis with trailers. But there is such a thing as incomplete fulfillment of the mitzvah. If you wear tefillin and you're missing one parsha, so there's no partial credit. You don't get any fulfillment of any mitzvah. Or if you only have tzitzis on three corners of the talus and you're missing the tzitzis on the fourth corner, so we paskin like the opinion in the Mishnah, you're not getting to anything at all. The tzitzis in the four corners, amakim zezeh. If you only have alulas and hadasim and arabas, you're missing an esrog, or you're missing hadasim and missing arabas, so you have pasala arabas, so you're not getting to the mitzvah at all. But over here, if you live in Eretz Yisrael, not under Jewish control, there is a partial mitzvah, but not the complete mitzvah. In the days of the Tanoim and Amoraim, Eretz Yisrael was not under Jewish control. But nonetheless, the Gemara speaks about the significance of the mitzvah, the partial mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. So first, Abnei Nezer says, we should realize we won't be able to fulfill the mitzvah Bishlei Musa today, over 100 years ago, because it's not under Jewish control. Which today is no longer the case. Today, Eretz Yisrael is under Jewish control. So the mitzvah will be Bishlei Musa. So he writes, imagine the story. What would it be? The Chassidish Rebbe's would move to Eretz Yisrael. Would all the Chassidim move with them? Let's say, Sochetcha Rebbe is going to move to Eretz Yisrael. Will all the Chassidim be able to move with them to Eretz Yisrael? He says they won't have a Parnassah there. That's the way he imagines it. They won't have a Parnassah. So if the Rebbe will go to Eretz Yisrael, the Hasidim are faithful Hasidim, they'll certainly send money to support the Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, but the Rebbe won't be able to have any influence on his Hasidim. They'll be living in Chutzpah. The Rebbe won't accomplish anything in Eretz Yisrael. The Iker mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is not, the Abnei Nezer, the Sefer Rebbe coins these expressions, the mitzvah is not so much yeshiva of Eretz Yisrael to live, to dwell in Eretz Yisrael, but rather yeshiv ha'aretz, to improve the land. A farmer who plants in Eretz Yisrael, that's the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Someone who paves highways, someone who builds houses, someone who works on the security of the country, someone who's in the army and works on the security of the country, or someone who sees to it that the economy is in shape. They don't know how the economy exists at all in Eretz Yisrael, but someone who does something to improve the country, or someone who educates, a Chassidish Rebbe who lives, or a rabbi who teaches Torah in Eretz Yisrael, has an influence on the people who live there. That's called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. But some to live in Eretz Yisrael, that's a very incomplete mitzvah. He says that in his time, the mitzvah would be incomplete on two levels. Number one, Eretz Yisrael was not under Jewish control. So the Iker mitzvah Bishlei Musa, the complete mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, only applies when v'hirashtem es ha'aretz v'yishavtem bo, when Eretz Yisrael is under Jewish control, and then the Jewish people live there. Number two, when you do yishuv Eretz Yisrael, when you contribute something to the yishuv of the Medina. Then he quotes the famous line that others quote from him. Rabbi Yosef Engel quotes this in one of his essays from the Abnei Nezer, that when we write a get, so we always write chalila, when one gets divorced, so you write what city the get is being written in. Then in order to identify the city, let's say I live in New York, so I think probably every state of the Union probably has a New York. So in order to identify which New York we're talking about, so we write New York, which is on the ocean and the Hudson River. Masa diyasva al kef yama ba'al nahar Hudson. That's the minhag from the days of the Rishonim, that you identify where the city is located by the oceans, the seas, the lakes, or the rivers, in order to know which New York you're talking about. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that you only identify Masa, a city, the Yasva, which is located on the Har Hudson. You only write that if we use the Hudson River for our purposes in the city. If you don't use the water from the lake or the water from the river, then it's not called Yasva. Yasva sitting doesn't mean location, simply location, geographic location. It means that there's a relationship between the city and the river. So he says here also the mitzvah of yeshiva, living yeshiva Eretz Yisrael. Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael means that there's a relationship between the person and Eretz Yisrael. Not that he lives in Eretz Yisrael and the chassidim are sending him his salary from Chutz La'aretz. He's basically living in Chutzlort, and not really living in Eretz Yisrael. That's what he claims. Abnezer writes in his tshuva, when Yankov Avinu finally, after 20 years, he comes back to Eretz Yisrael, he ran away because he heard his brother Esav wanted to kill him, and then he came back, he didn't know whether he still wants to kill him or not, so he came back to Eretz Yisrael. So he gave an elaborate gift to his brother Esav to appease him. And then Rashi quotes an expression from the Medrash. He gave all these behemoths and everything that he, all the valuable possessions that he, all the money that he earned in Chutz La'aretz, he gave to his brother Esav when he came back. The Rashi quotes the expression from the Medrash. Yankov Avinu says, "Ein nichsei Chutz La'aretz to die heimli." I earned all the money in Chutz La'aretz. I'm not interested in keeping this money. Why is that? What's wrong with money that you earned in Chutz La'aretz? Well, it's possible the money. Nishgi gamet the geld. He earned the money kedin b'kalocha. So he says, no. If a Jew earns money in America, earns money in Chutz La'aretz, and he goes to Eretz Yisrael, which is not under Jewish control. See, if a Jew retires to Eretz Yisrael today, and he spends his money in Eretz Yisrael, so he's helping out the economy. There's a Jewish country, and he's helping out the economy. But in the days of the Avnei Nezer, the Jew's going to move to Eretz Yisrael. There is no Jewish economy. There is no Jewish country. It's all a Goyish country. So he's basically living on the money that he earned in Chutz La'aretz, not improving anything in Eretz Yisrael. So he's basically living in Chutz La'aretz. He's just located geographically. He's located in Eretz Yisrael. So he claims, Sachachev Rebbe claims, that this is a very incomplete myth. Incomplete because Eretz Yisrael is not, at that time, not under Jewish control. And secondly, he's not improving the economy. He's not having any influence on the Balabatim who live there. He's not planting anything. He's not doing anything for the security of the country. So that's a very incomplete mitzvah. So he says, the place of the Rebbe, really, it makes more sense that he should remain in Chutz La'aretz. So that's why the Chassidish Rebbe didn't go. There is a mitzvah, there's man hazeh, but the Chassidish Rebbe didn't go because they wouldn't really be fulfilling the mitzvah of the Shleimus. It would be very incomplete. And if they would stay behind in Chutz La'aretz, they would be accomplishing much more with their balabat. It's interesting, there is a tshuva in the Maharam Shik. Maharam Shik lived in the middle 1800s, late 1800s. He was a student of the Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer lived in Hungary. Maharam Shik lived in Hungary also. And they were fighting reform. They were in the rabbinate, they were fighting reform. So one of the students, a wild story, one of the students of the Maharam Shik, who was in the practicing rabbinate in Hungary, who was fighting reform all the time, didn't enjoy this style of rabbinate. He was offered a position in the late 1800s, he should move to Eretz Yisrael and give shiurim and sit and learn in Pastor Shilas. So he was so thrilled, he was so excited, so he packed up his bag when he's ready to leave, and he sent a letter to his Rebbe, the Maharam Shik, for a bracha. The Rebbe should give him a bracha on his leave. So the Maharam Shik sends him back a letter, I can't give you a bracha, I think you're doing shaloi kedin. You're not allowed to leave. And he writes, when you were a student in the yeshiva, you learned in my yeshiva, together with many other students, we had no right to draft you into the rabbinate. If you didn't want to, you didn't have to go to the rabbinate, you could have gone into business. Many of your classmates went into business. You chose on your own to go into the rabbinate, and you were successful. And the rabbinate in Hungary involved fighting with reform. You found it distasteful, but you were successful fighting reform, maintaining the observance of your community. So he says, you have no right to leave, and he gives the mashal, like the captain of the ship is not allowed to leave the ship until he's secured the safety of all of the passengers in the ship. And he says the general in the army is not allowed to run away from the front until he's secured the safety of all of his soldiers. He has to watch over all of his soldiers. So he says, you're a general in the army, you're fighting reform, that's the muscle thing, it's fighting reform, there's a war, and you're the general in the army, and we'd have no right to draft you, but Lamaisa, you're in the army now, and you are a general, and you're successful, so you have to stay until you see to it that all of your balabatim are secure. And then he tells over a story about his Rebbe, the Chassam Sofer, which they quote in the biographies, they quote in the history books from the Maharam Shik. This is the only source that it's known from. That part of the story is known. The Chassam Sofer was born in Frankfurt. He was a Yekke. He was not a Hungarian. And he always signed off his children, Moshe HaKotan be Frankfurt. He was born in Frankfurt. And he was raised in Frankfurt. His parents lived there. And then he had a rabbanus in Pressburg. He always wanted to return back to Frankfurt. So later in life, he was once offered a rabbinical position to go back to Frankfurt. So he was very excited. And he told the community in Frankfurt he thinks he's going to take them up on it. He plans to give up his position in Pressburg and to move back to Frankfurt. So when the Balabatim in Pressburg in Hungary, what Pressburg is known as Bratislava now, every city in Europe, the Jews had one name and the Goyim had a totally different name. Unrelated to each other. So I think the non-Jews call the city Bratislava and the Jews call it Pressburg. So when the Balabatim in Pressburg heard about it, that the Rav is leaving, so they all came to his home crying and pleading with him that he has to stay. And they were crying, and the point that they won him over was, they said, you were so successful in fighting reform. He was very successful in some sense. He was the leader of the, he was the general in the army fighting the reform in Hungary at that time. And they said, if you will leave, we're not sure what's going to happen. We're not sure whether the man who's going to take over after you will be as successful as you. We may lose out. The whole orthodoxy may lose out to the reform. So when they told him that, so the Chassam Sofer said he thinks he's not allowed to leave. Even though he's dying to go back to Frankfurt where he was born, he feels that he's not allowed to leave. So that's what the Maram Shik wrote in the letter to his students. He says, I don't think you're permitted to leave your position. You're successful in fighting reform and you have to stay. And then he quotes, also, he was the one who made the following passage famous. He quotes a Ritva, makes a comment in Sukkah, in the end of the second parak in Sukkah. The Talmud has a principle, Ha'oisik b'mitzvah, potam min ha'mitzvah. One is busy taking care of one mitzvah, is not obligated to stop in the middle and perform another mitzvah. Even though the mitzvah that he's doing now, you can take a break. If you'll take a break, you'll be able to finish the mitzvah later. And the mitzvah, the second mitzvah that comes your way, either you do it now or you lose out. So really, it would make more sense to say, interrupt the first mitzvah, do the second mitzvah, then go back to finish the first mitzvah. There's time to finish the first mitzvah. You won't have time to do the second mitzvah. If you wait another hour, you won't be able to fulfill the second mitzvah. But nonetheless, that's the rule. If you're engaged in doing mitzvah A, you're not obligated to be mafsik in the middle, to pause in order to do mitzvah B, even though mitzvah B is a mitzvah averus. You won't have an opportunity to fulfill. So the Maharam Shik is the one who quotes the passage from the Ritva, the end of the second parak in Sukkah. The Ritva says, not only are you not obligated, you're not obligated to be mopsik to do mitzvah B, you're not permitted to do it. Because since you're not obligated, then it's called the Dvar Harshus. It's not an obligatory mitzvah anymore. It's not a mitzvah, the one is being mopsik in the middle of a mitzvah, to do something that's to dilly dally, to do a Dvar Harshus. So that's what he says over here. The Maharam Shik writes to his student, you're dealing with two distinct mitzvahs over here. Now you're in the mitzvah of fighting reform. You want to move to Eretz Yisrael and sit and learn and pass Mishailas and give Shiurim. That's a different mitzvah. He says, since you're doing mitzvah A, you're not allowed to be mafsik in the middle of mitzvah A, to give up mitzvah A to fight reform in order to trade it in and to do mitzvah B to learn Torah. You have to continue to do this mitzvah. This was the tshuva of the Maharam Shik that Rav Chaim Isaac quoted when Chief Rabbi Cook, the first Chief Rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, passed away in 1935, that he was corresponding with Rav Chaim Moser. Rav Chaim Moser was the greatest rabbi in Vilna. He was the big Pesach of the generation. He died around 1940. Rav Chaim Moser, in the middle of the Second World War. So Rav Chaim Moser was already an old man when he died. So before he died, Rav Cook died in 1935, 5 years before him. So, around 5 years before that, Rav Cook was corresponding with Rav Chaim Moser that he should move to Eretz Yisrael. He should retire from his rabbinical position in Vilna. He was already an older person. He should retire, move to Eretz Yisrael. And he agreed. So Rav Cook had an apartment ready for him, and he had a position ready for him, and a salary, and a title. I think it was going to be called Reish Galusa or something. I don't know how can how can you be the Reish Galusa if you live in Eretz Yisrael? I'm not sure, but some kind of a, because Rav Cook was the chief rabbi, so it wasn't going to make him the chief rabbi. It was going to make him a bigger title than chief rabbi. Chief rabbi of the whole world. Reish Galusa over everything. And Rav Chaim Moser was prepared to leave. And then the last minute, He sent Rav Kook a letter, which is available printed in Rav Chaim Moshe's handwriting. So it's not a forgery. They printed the facsimile of the letter where he writes he was prepared to leave, and then the Rabbanim told him that if he leaves, a lot of things are going to fall apart. That they felt that he still needed in Vilna, he was still in charge of the Vad HaYeshivas and raising money. Millions and millions of dollars literally went through his hands to be distributed to the poor and to be distributed to support all the various yeshivas and all the tzedakas and so on. So they told him that he still needed a chutzlot, so he's not permitted to go. This is the background of Rabbi Soloveitchik's position. Somebody was asking me today about this. Rabbi Soloveitchik was very upset when Rabbanim in America, either in Chinuch or in the Rabbinate, years ago, when they wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael. So he said, there's so much intermarriage in America, there's so much assimilation, any rabbi who's teaching in a yeshiva or a day school, or any rabbi who's in the practicing rabbinate, is basically fighting assimilation. And he used to say that the rabbi is like the general in the army, and the general is not allowed to leave, the captain of the ship is not allowed to leave. So I used to think in my heart, what is he, making jokes? What kind of captain of the army? Well, what kind of captain of the ship? What is he talking about? Then I was surprised. 40 years later, I find that that's what the Maram Shik wrote in his tshuva. And that's the tshuva that Rav Chaim Moshe quoted to Rav Kook, that he feels he's not permitted to leave Vilna because the captain of the ship is not allowed to leave. He has the responsibilities to stay behind. Many of the Rabbanim talk it into themselves that they're so indispensable that the whole world will collapse without them. I live in Washington Heights. Washington Heights, a lot of Germans, a lot of German Jews, and they have a German expression that translated into English, it says that the cemetery is full of all of those indispensable people. The people who think that while they're alive, the world can't exist, the world can't continue to exist without me, and then they die, and they're buried in the cemetery, and the world continues. The community still continues to exist, everything continues. So a lot of the rabbis talk it into themselves that they're God's gift to the world, that the communities and chutz lords can't exist without them, and they have Chaim Moshe's psak, they have the psak from the Maram Shik, that they have to stay behind. So a person has to be honest with himself. Is he really so needed in chutz lords or not? The Talmud tells us also that if one lives in Eretz Yisrael, and there are loads of girls in Eretz Yisrael, he fell in love with a girl who lives in Chutz Lot. So the Gemara says he's permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael in order to marry the girl that he fell in love with. Well, let's say there are yeshivas all over, and every corner in Yerushalayim there's another yeshiva, and he only wants to learn in some yeshiva Chutz Lot. There's so many yeshivas here, no, Nafsha Choshka, he only loves that Rebbe. So the Gemara says he's permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael because life is going to be miserable for him. A person who enjoys learning has to learn in the yeshiva of his choice. If you force him to learn in a yeshiva, he's not going to be happy, so he's not going to be learning well. You tell him to go marry a different girl, but he fell in love with this girl. But if life is unreasonable in Eretz Yisrael, then you're not mechuyev to live in Eretz Yisrael. If it's a reasonable choice, you can either, when you're determining where you're going to live, either live over here, live over here, and it's approximately the same, and it's a reasonable choice, then you're obligated to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's unreasonable nit. So in Shulchan Aruch, again, if you look in Eben HaEzer, in Shulchan Aruch, when they have the laws, when a man divorces his wife, he has to take suba, unless it's clearly the wife's fault. And then it says if the couple has a dispute, and one of them wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, so whoever chooses to move to Eretz Yisrael has the gerech to taina, they're right. The one who insists on staying behind is wrong. The one who stays behind is the one who is responsible for breaking up their marriage. And when they quote this, these dinim from the Mishnayos and from the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, so the commentaries on the bottom of the page point out, what if the person has a parnas in Chutz Lort? So if we'll go to Eretz Yisrael, have to live off of charity. So that's an unreasonable choice. So under such circumstances, there's no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, to live off of charity. Live in Chutz Lort and maintain your parnas. I remember many years ago, at least 10, 15 years ago, it was tough doing intercession. 15 years ago. 20 years ago. It was during intercession and I spoke in Los Angeles. And I was taking an LR plane to go back to New York, which was going to go to Eretz Yisrael. And I was going to Eretz Yisrael for a week to yeshiva, to visit the Yeshiva University, to visit all the students who are learning in the various yeshivas. So before the plane took off, so I see somebody going from the front section, from the fancy section. I was sitting in the back section. So I saw someone from the front going to the back. He looks very familiar. I couldn't place him exactly. He was wearing jeans and he was wearing sneakers without any socks. He went to use the men's room, I guess. So then as he's coming back to sit in the business section, so he passes by my seat. He says, "Hi, Rebbe." So I said, "You look so familiar." He said, "Yeah, he learned the Mashiach 25 years ago, whatever, when I first started teaching in the yeshiva." So I say, "What do you do now?" "Oh, he's married. He used to be he's a doctor. He used to practice medicine. What do you call it? A radiologist? The one who reads the x-rays. It's called a radiologist, I think. So he used to practice radiology in Los Angeles, and he made some fortune of money. It's a couple of million dollars. And he has a few children, and now he moved to Eretz Yisrael to fulfill the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. And he lives in Savion. It's a very poor section on the outskirts of Tel Aviv. Yeah, he lives in Savion, and he only makes $500,000 now a year, and his wife cannot get used to living in poverty. So I was going to put my hand in my pocket, give him a $10 bill, nebuch, to buy a pair of socks and to buy a pair of shoes. And he says he has to move back to America because his wife can't get used to living in poverty. She can't get used to making only $500,000 a year. So I couldn't tell him anything, but I think it's a little unreasonable. Make $500,000 in Eretz Yisrael, that's not so bad. You should be obligated to live. The can say in Shulchan Aruch, if you're going to live in Eretz Yisrael, to live off of charity. Well, let's say a person, this case came up, let's say a person was a doctor in Chutz Lords, and then if he moved to Eretz Yisrael, he won't be able to function as a doctor unless he takes the exams all over again, and he won't be able to do that. He's an older person, so he'll have to be a janitor. He'll have to take some menial job. But maybe that's unreasonable. I can understand that's unreasonable. He has a B'Kovadik of Parnas and Chutz Lords, and he should move to Eretz Yisrael and lead a much lower standard of living. I can understand that's like living in poverty, okay, but to move to Eretz Yisrael, never only to make $500,000 a year, I don't think that's a valid reason not to live in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara tells us that the story of Megillas Rus was by Hero Barth. There was a famine in Eretz Yisrael, there was no food to eat. So Elimelech and his wife, Naomi, and their two sons, Machlon and Kilion, moved to Chutz Lortz. And Halacha says you're permitted to move to Chutz Lortz under such circumstances because it was very difficult times in Eretz Yisrael. But the Talmud points out because the Pasuk says in the beginning of Megillas Rus they were Ephrasim, they were Anoshim Chashuvim, they were the Tzavadik of Balabatim, everybody looked up to them. So Talmid HaChomim and Rabbanim and Choshev of Balabatim have to be a little more machmer on themselves because everybody looks up to them and they're going to do 10 madregas lower. So if the Choshev of Balabatim are going to move to Eretz Yisrael, everybody's going to run away from, they're going to move away from Eretz Yisrael, so everyone's going to move, even those who can afford to stay behind. So that's why they were punished for leaving Eretz Yisrael. If they would have been plain Balabatim, it wouldn't have been a violation. It was only because the Pasuk says they were Ephrasim, they were Anoshim Chashuvim, and Adam Choshev Shiny, and Adam Choshev has to be machmer on himself more, because everyone looks up to him and thinks, oh, he's machmer, and I don't have to be so machmer. So the Pasuk says they were punished for moving away from Eretz Yisrael. Yes, the mitzvah does apply this man hazeh. There is a mitzvah whenever it's reasonable to live in Eretz Yisrael or to live in Chutz Lortz, so a person should choose to live in Eretz Yisrael. I remember the first time I met Rabbi Avraham Shapiro, who just passed away a year and a half ago in Sukkot. So I remember we were in Eretz Yisrael, Kiryat Arba, that summer. So somebody from the Rabbinical Council of America met me in Kiryat Arba, maybe Rabbi Herschel Shechtetak, he went to visit his nephew there, who was in the army, who was in Kiryat Arba. So someone told us that tomorrow, the Rabbinical Council is, they were touring in Eretz Yisrael that summer for 10 days or something, and they were going to visit the chief rabbis and visit different yeshivas, and whoever told me, I think it was Rabbi Herschel Shechtetak, he told me it would be kedai for me and for the whole group that I should join with them just for one day. So I said, okay. So I made up where I'm going to join. So I went with my wife and all of my children. Now we have 9 children. At that time we had a few fewer children. And so they first went to visit Chief Rabbi Avraham Shapiro. He was just chosen as Chief Rabbi then, say, half a year before or something. So he was a big kibitzer. He had a tremendous sense of humor. So he's telling the rabbis from the Rabbinical Council of America, he was never in the rabbinate. He was a Rosh Yeshiva all his life, teaching in yeshiva, is never in the rabbinate. He's going to have to ask them for guidance how to act as chief rabbi. They have many years of experience in the rabbinate. He was kibbutzing. I think some of them thought that he meant it. He was joking. He was always a kibbutzer. Whenever I met him, always kibbutzing. Unbelievable. So as we were leaving the chief rabbi's office, so they were introducing him to all of the people who were there. So they introduced me and they said, this is Rabbi Heschel Schechter. So he says to me, oh, Rabbi Heschel Schechter, he heard of me. So I said, you probably think of the other Heschel Schechter. He was the famous Rabbi Heschel Schechter, who was a chaplain in the American army during World War II. He was the one who liberated Rabbi Lau when he was a little child. So he says, no, he means me. He says, no, I mean you. I read your Divrei Torah. He tells me you quoted the Chazon Ish on this, and quoted Rabbi Soloveitchik on that. He used to speak so quickly. In half a minute, he already said five Divrei Torah mine that he read, and the Mizrahi publications, and the Or HaMizrach. He says he wants me to come visit him. He wants me to come with all of my children. So he used to, at that time, he was the Rosh Yeshiva America Saraf, so he had an American student who now lives back in America. At that time, that American student was in charge of all of his American affairs. So this American student took our phone number and he called us up and he picked us up by car to visit Rabbi Shapiro. So first, he gave a bracha. He was a kohen. So first he gave a bracha to all of our children and they loved that very much. And then he started giving me a sales pitch for 25 minutes at least why I should move to Eretz Yisrael. Why it's important they need people like me to have Talmid HaChachamim who know how to pass from Shilas, but they need people like me who know how to give Shiur and Hagan Sadrosh. And then he says, and he's going to find me a job. Any yeshiva I want to teach in, he'll help me get a job. And if I want to make my own yeshiva, he has money, and he has access to money, he knows where to get money, and he's going to help me make my own yeshiva, my own code, whatever I want. Talking, 25 minutes, all sales pitch. Then at the end of the 25 minutes, he says, by the way, what do you do aside from teaching? He knows I teach in the university. Do I teach anywhere else? Do I do anything else? So I start saying yes. So at that time, I used to give a weekly shiur in Rabbi Lukstein Shul. So I said, I give a weekly shiur every Monday night in Rabbi Lukstein Shul. So he says, how many people attend that shiur? So I said, 35 people every week. Then I said, I give a weekly shiur in Queens. How many people attend that shiur? At that time, it used to be 70 people used to attend. Now it's already 27 years later, so it's 35 people, 40 people. At that time, there were 70 people at 10. And what else do I do? So I said, once a month, I give a shiur in New Jersey in this community. Then once a month, I give a shiur in this shul, in the other shul. How many people at 10? And listening to everything. Then he says, he takes it back. I shouldn't move to Eretz Yisrael. He says, you should stay in America. He says, if you have so much hashpa, you thought that I just taught in the yeshiva. So the students I teach in the yeshiva, I'll have the same number of students in Eretz Yisrael that I'll be living in Eretz Yisrael, having an influence on the people in Eretz Yisrael. But he says, if I teach, see, I'm like those people buried in the cemetery, all the indispensable people. So that's what he said about me. He thought, if you're accomplishing so much in Chutz La'aretz, he said, he doesn't know in my case whether I should move to Eretz Yisrael. But in principle, there is such a mitzvah. There certainly is a mitzvah, and we all have to keep our eyes open for the opportunity to fulfill that mitzvah. If it's possible to live in Eretz Yisrael in a reasonable fashion, not to live in poverty and not to live with Agmas Nefesh, we'll be happy in marriage, we'll be happy making a parnasa, we'll be happy in learning Torah, whatever makes people happy. If life will be reasonable, then there certainly is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. And the mitzvah certainly is a biblical mitzvah, and today the mitzvah will be a mitzvah b'shleimus. Eretz Yisrael is now under Jewish control, and it is not difficult to observe the agricultural mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. Many people are observing the mitzvahs, not so difficult. And it really is one of the neglected mitzvahs that in our generation, in every generation, there are certain mitzvahs that are sort of the historically, this is the mitzvah of that generation. In our generation, this is really the mitzvah. If there would be more Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, the country would be much more secure, and we wouldn't have the problems that we have now. So we should all tackle work on this and try to move to Eretz Yisrael. Agud Tavach.